This song we're about to do, yes, hello. The song we're about to do is called Glass and the Ghost Children. It's number one in Malaysia. To explain this song, I have to explain somewhat the concept of the album, which of course I don't want to do because no one's got it right yet. But I will tell you that the whole album that we put out, Machina, which includes the album that hasn't come out, is a concept album in which there's a story. And the lead character is called Glass. So this song, Glass and the Ghost Children, is about Glass. The Ghost Children would be some combination of our audience, which would be you. And I wasn't exactly thinking of you, but people like you. And the idea is that, Glass sort of speaks for, to, and about himself and the people he's trying to speak to, which of course would be people like you. And in the song, it's sort of half about what it's like to sort of seek for deliverance, drugs, God. And the other half is sort of a love story. And people are always asking me what our songs are about, my songs are about. And this is sort of like a painting in that it doesn't have a literal meaning, but it does mean something.
Thank you. here. So I'm operating on the premise that I'm hearing the voice of God, or what I perceive God to be speaking to me or through me. But maybe I'm completely... So all my kind of demagoguery in my life about me thinking that my life has importance might... Me thinking that my life has importance might thought of it on the fact that I believe that I'm following my intuition, which in and of itself may be completely false.
So then I started freaking out, thinking in and of itself may be completely false. And again, this totally insane creature who believes that he's acting upon kind of heavenly intuition, but meanwhile he's totally rampant. And I started thinking maybe this was the cause of all the negativity against him. And I started thinking maybe this was the cause of all the negativity against him.
Next song was written in a very difficult period of my life. We had put out our first album, Gish, in 1991, and we did a tour for we did a tour for about 14 months, and I think the longest we'd ever been on tour before that was about 20 days. So for all of us, it was a very sort of mind-numbing experience. It was great, but at the same time, we were really sort of fighting for our music and what we believed in, which in 1991 and 1992 was not as easy as it seems today. So after we sort of built up all this momentum to tour on our record, we came back to Chicago, and I was living in this very bad apartment with bad heat with a bad hippie and named Bob, for history's sake. And I entered into probably the worst writing slump that I've ever had. I probably couldn't really reasonably write a good song for about 8 months. And also being in public in that particular period of my life brought out a lot of feelings that I had sort of repressed from childhood. You know, sort of this weird abused child syndrome where I locked everything away and figured, well, I'll never have to deal with that again. And suddenly I found myself confronted with all these demons that I thought I'd locked away. And I entered into this very horrible period of my life. I eventually ended up even at one point sleeping on Darcy's floor. I lived in a parking garage for a while. And I was completely obsessed with killing myself. It became my primary preoccupation, I guess. Taking away songwriter, I became like a suicidal maniac. And you can laugh, it's funny. And out of the depths of this despair, I sort of bottomed out, and it literally came down to a simple decision, at least in my mind at that time, which was either kill yourself or sort of get used to it and work and live and be happy. And so I wrote this song. Yes. As you can see, I chose another form of death, which is rock and roll. But that being said, I wrote this song. This song and another song, Disarm. I wrote this song at this sort of critical juncture in my life, and not only did these songs sort of give me hope for the future, but they certainly changed the band's lives. And one other sort of ironic point about this song is, although the main lyric is "Today is the greatest day," it's not the song you think it is. It's a different one. It's pretty much like a joke song about how I want to kill myself. But of course, nobody ever gets that because they get very fixated on the positive lines. But if you actually listen, there's way more negativity. But of course, at this point in my life, it is a positive song because, you know, it's about survival. And certainly our survival as well. Speaking of Gish, this next song, why did I choose this song? I was trying to ask myself, I was riding in the cab today, and I was thinking, why did I choose this song? Because it doesn't really have a good story. Oftentimes on an album, there's a song where you sort of put off writing the lyrics, really getting down into the core of what a song means. You'll have like, we call it bullshit lyrics, you know, like, you're, you know, the sky is gray and everything's okay and, you know, your dad's gay and it's, you just sort of sing things. Somewhere in there's a meaning, but it takes a long time sometimes. And oftentimes, this song in particular, Snail from Gish, and another song, the cheering's gotta go. I'm just kidding. No, you're throwing off my nervousness. This song from Gish, Snail, and also Mayonnaise from Siamese Dream are songs that at the time when I wrote the lyrics, I really didn't think much of the lyrics, and I thought that, again, in my mind, the lyrics were sort of bullshit because I wasn't really saying anything in particular. I thought, well, this song doesn't really have a particular message. Now that I look back on this song in particular, I think the reason I'm still attracted to this song is because it really evokes the sort of simplicity that we actually did feel at that time in our lives. In 1990, 1991, when we were making our first record, we were much simpler people. You know, nobody knew who we were. Not even in Chicago, really, anybody knew who we were. So our views about our music and our views about the world were much simpler, almost sort of fae psychedelic. So when I listen to this song now and when I sing this song now, it evokes to me a simpler time within the band and in our lives where, you know, it really was about sort of getting up and playing and the sun shining. So this is Snail.
See you on the moon.
this song, Stand Inside Your Love. I'm going to trick you, and then you cheer, and then I can say it again. This song, Stand Inside Your Love. Every once in a while, a song comes, and it comes so fast that you can't even almost remember how it happened. And you almost feel kind of guilty because you almost feel like you don't own the song. Of course, you still take credit. But this song, Stand Inside Your Love, I had written the music. The song was a little different. It sort of was more new wave. I can show you really quickly. It was more like... And I envisioned it as a new wave song. And when the band first came back together to record the Machine album, within about maybe the second or third rehearsal that we had, I sort of threw this up as an idea I had. We tried to play it the new wave way, and it didn't sort of work. And suddenly it just mutated into what I would call classic Smashing Pumpkins, in the sense that it sounds like it could come from any album. And we immediately arranged the song top to bottom. So the song that you hear on the album is basically the same musical arrangement, but I didn't really have a melody and I didn't have any words. And I went home that day thinking, well, I really should try to write some words for the song. I really like it. I woke up the next morning and I was reading a book, and all I had for the song was the line, "Who wouldn't stand inside your love?" Which I can't say I really knew what that even meant at that particular moment. And it's the strangest feeling, because all of a sudden it's like a faucet opens up in my head and suddenly I can understand the whole song. I see it all. So the lyrics to the song were, and I'm not joking when I say this, were literally written in 10 minutes. And I have the sheet of paper that I wrote the lyrics on. And there's not one word is different, not one word was ever changed. It all just came out in the stream of consciousness. To talk about what the song is about, it's probably one of the only rare... it's probably one of the only love songs I've ever written. I dedicate it to my friend and partner, Elena. She doesn't like me very much right now, so... It's true. No, but the reason I say that she doesn't like me very much right now is when I sing this song, it reminds me of how precious love is and how important love is in all of our lives. And even though I wrote this song for a person, I would say to anyone who likes this song that I also write it for you, in the sense that I'm trying to express that feeling that when you really try to explain to somebody how much you really care about them. So this is maybe she'll forget.
Yeah.
Okay, story time. To Sheila was the first song on our fourth album, Adore. And you guys are grievous clappers. This song, To Sheila, which was the first song on our fourth album, Adore, really represents a turning point, obviously, in the band's history. For those who don't know, Jimmy had left the band before the making of that album and didn't participate on that album. Although he's not even here right now, so that's perfect. He was there, sort of spiritually, which we later confirmed between each other. But besides that point, this was the first song that I recorded for the album, and I just went in the studio and sang and played live, and then we later built the music on top of the song. But if I can describe two things about this particular song. One, the song is, in essence, a veiled love song, but it also talks about the idea that all we truly seek in life is to sort of feel alive. And so the protagonist or antagonist, I'm never quite sure, is saying to the other person that you make me real, which is a sort of simplistic line, but it has so much hope in the idea that someone's going to sort of make you whole and complete. And in a metaphysical sense, you know, this song really symbolized to me at the time the breaking of from the past. We were certainly trying to embrace new things and take a new direction with the band, which in some sense of the word proved to be fortuitous, and in another sense of the word proved to be disastrous. And the thing that I really think about when I play this song is I can see myself playing in the studio, and I know damn well that there's going to be a lot of trouble to follow. And when I finished this particular take that ended up on the album, I was shaking because I just knew that, you know, I'd stepped off a cliff from which there was no returning. When we play this song now, it brings back the memory of that time and the defiance of that time. And so this song still represents very much to me not only the idea that our fans, which we hopefully count you in on that, represent to us as a band, but also the defiance of our band to sort of stand up for what we believe in no matter what. And this is To Sheila.
Twilight fades through blistered Avalon. The sky's cruel torch on aching Autobahn. Into the uncertain divine, we scream into the last end. You make me real. You make me real. Strong as I feel. Sheila rides on crashing and gale. Intake eyes leave passing vapor trails with blushing brilliance alive. Because it's time to arrive.
You make me.
a summer star graces all of me. Highway warm sing silent poetry, and I could bring you the light and take you home into the night. Lately I just can't seem to believe the sky and the friends have changed the scenery. It's time for
strange talking to someone. So, I'm not used to it. I used to talk a lot, and then I made a deal with the band that I would shut up. A long time ago. I just, the year was 1994, and I just moved into, no clapping for the year. It was a good year. The year was 1994, and I just moved into a new house, what was eventually going to be a purple Victorian house in Chicago. And I was like, okay, you know, it's time to write this record, you know, this record that was going to be called Melancholy, which I think it was going to be called that. And this is the first song that I wrote for that album. And this song really embodies the spirit of that time. I'd just gotten married. I'd just moved into a new house. The band was achieving the kind of success that people only dream of. And I was really hopeful with the idea that I was eventually, and someday, and it looked like it was going to happen, actually have a happy life. didn't quite work out that way. But, But I don't think that's not what I really want to emphasize about this particular song. You know, hope is really the key component in life, because one must have hope and faith to actually get out of bed and do anything in this world. And you know, in my mind at that time, I think I was 27 years old. I thought that I had arrived. I supposedly had everything that one would want. You know, the wife, the cat, the house, the car, and the money. And oh yeah, the fame. And but I think what I'm really trying to say here is all I ever really wanted was you know, a happy home. To sing this song now, it doesn't bother me, because I really went into those situations with the best intentions. And then when I found out that they weren't really for me, then of course I changed those things. The other sort of component, and people have often asked why I called this song a 33. Actually, yes, the number 33, it is a good number. I actually had hoped to write three songs, 33, 66, and 99. I never wrote 66 and 99, so that's for the internet. But the reason I was attracted to the number 33 at that particular time was I had a friend read my tarot cards, and the person said that when you're 33 years old, this is when I was 27. When you're 33 years old, your life is going to completely change. So as I sit here today at 33 years old, my life is going to completely change at 33. So this song serves both as notice, prophecy, and sort of a hope unhoped, or unwished. Maybe that's better. So this is 33.
Yeah. streets greet me once again. I know I can't be late. Supper's waiting on the table. Tomorrow's just an excuse away.
To the album concept for a moment. In this next song, which is called Blue Skies Bring Tears, please don't clap. I know you don't know this one, so. In this particular song, is it protagonist or antagonist? Antagonist is the causer, right? Okay, our hero, the antagonist. It's protagonist. See? You can tell I didn't go to college. Okay. The protagonist. Our hero, of course. He's not a zero anymore, he's the hero. at least he's trying to be, I guess. See, they've never heard these stories, so we're all on a wonderful journey here. It's all very Canadian. yes. Our protagonist, the hero, no longer zero, has a dream. And in the dream, he envisions that he is a soldier in the final war on Earth. And He's so disconnected from everything that he seeks out love and connection from wherever he can find it. The things that he would take for granted, food and comfort and home, no longer exist. And all anyone is asking him to do is kill and not be killed. And in this dream, he envisions a life where there's literally nothing left but a name and a number. And the way this ties into the story of the album is that the protagonist, the hero, no longer Zero, envisions that his world is basically coming to some sort of Armageddon, and he will end up basically like this character in the dream. So this dream serves, this song serves the dream not only as prophecy, but as sort of destiny waiting to happen.
Down.
what this song's about, honestly. That's a problem. Make it up? Yeah. Well, I can't tell you that we were working on the album and started to go really crazy. The album was proving to be a little more difficult for lots of different reasons. And so my girlfriend and I took a vacation to Long Island. I never in my life would have thought I would have taken a vacation on Long Island, that's all I can tell you. We were jumped by a stoner and he stole my guitar. But we were staying we were in the wrong hotel, I can tell you that. I mean, we were like, the closest people to our age were about 30 years older. And I think they thought we were there for some sort of goth convention or something. And so I brought along a guitar with the hopes that I would write what became, you know, I thought this was going to be the last song I wrote for Machina. I still wrote one more after this, but it was with the intention of writing one more song. So we were sitting out by the beach, and I'm playing guitar, and I started playing the riff, and I started singing, like, you know, the bullshit lyrics. Try to hold on, try to hold on. And my girlfriend turned to me and said, "Must every song you write be so sad?" And I said, "No, it's not try to hold on. It's, like, go ahead and try to hold on to me." If you know what I mean. Good luck, that's what I meant. It's more of a good luck. Good luck at trying to hold on to me. Or anybody, for that matter, because as we all know, it's impossible to hold on to anybody. Because if you set them free and it returns, then it was meant to be. And if it doesn't, it was meant to be free.
Have you ever been to Long Island, though? Yes.
So somewhere in between the very obvious lines of try to hold on, there's these really existential lyrics, which I think roughly approximate the way that I normally feel. I know I'm not supposed to go on the internet, but I do occasionally. As don't even, please. It's so embarrassing. It's sort of that high school thing, you know, where you really want to know what all the bad kids are saying about you. So, one sort of interesting criticism that I've seen recently about the songs that I'm writing is people say, you know, the songs don't seem as personal as they used to, and they don't seem as dramatic or emotional. And what I would say about a song like this is, I agree, but that's because I feel colder in my life. Everything that's happened to me in my life has made me feel more distant from my feelings. And so when I write a song like Try, which is somewhere between Try to Hold On to Me and crazy existential lyrics which somehow express the way that I feel, I am expressing the way that I feel. It's just people don't understand. So this is the cold version of me.
Try.
is a good one. I actually have a story for this one. Yes, thank you. I planned this one all out. This song is called The Dusty and Pete, or The Tale of Dusty and Mr. Pete. Yes, it's from that groundbreaking album, Door. And no one knows the story, so I feel sort of funny telling this story, but it is a true story. In the song, it's a boy and a girl song, but in the song, the man has murdered the girl. The man thinks that by murdering the girl, he's going to get rid of her. Of course, he doesn't realize that she's going to haunt him until the end of time, so he really can't rid himself of her at all. Yes, because there's no escape, as all you men know. So the moral to the tale is Pistol Pete murders Dusty. Dusty doesn't know that she's a ghost, so she keeps trying to contact Pistol Pete, and Pistol Pete can't understand what's bothering him. He's sure it's got something to do with a woman, he just doesn't realize that she's a ghost. So here's the murderous tale of Dusty and Pistol Pete.
Dusty screamed through doors and imaginary flowers. Why can't you miss me? Pistol Pete removed the final breast from her own kind, and she is shaking. What's
The year was 1979, and it was another good year. And I feel very naked telling all these stories. "1979" was the last song written for Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. And as the story goes, the idea had been kicking around for a while. It didn't have any words, except, I believe, "Shakedown 1979." It's always the one line. And we really were getting down to the end of the album, and there really wasn't a lot of time left. And we were sort of checking the list to see if the songs that we still had to work on. And Flood, who was producing the album, I said, "I really think this song has a lot of potential." And he said, "Well, you've got basically 24 hours to make it happen. So either come in here tomorrow and make this song happen, or it's not going to be on the album." So I went home that night, and I spent that night and the next morning writing the lyrics, did a demo at home. And I came the next day, and we did an acoustic version with a slightly different arrangement, but basically the same song. And, you know, it's just one of those moments where you just know that the song is a special song. And many people, because this is such a well-known song of ours, many people have asked, what does it mean? What does 1979 mean? Does it mean about when the year 1979? Are you trying to say something about the time? I can't really say why I picked the year 1979. I mean, it's as good as any other year, I suppose. Plus, it sounds good in a rhyme scheme. But that's a joke. And sometimes when I write a song, I see a picture in my head. For some reason, it's a sort of an obscure memory that I have. And the memory that I had for this particular song was I was about 18 years old, and I was driving down the road near my home, and it was really heavily raining, as only it can seem to rain in a gloomy way in Illinois. And I remember just sitting at a traffic light, and that's the memory. And I don't know why that memory sort of stayed, but that's the memory that I wrote the song from. That sort of feeling of sitting in a car at a traffic light. I know it doesn't sound very glamorous, but it emotionally connotates for me sort of a feeling of waiting for something to happen, and not being quite there yet, but it's just around the corner. And little did I know that I was right. So this is 1979.
Like white rider bar.
last song is called Raindrops and Sun Showers. And it's pretty simple, I have to say. It's basically about, once again, how you can't seem to please somebody. And all you're trying to do, is walk between the raindrops for them, which of course is impossible. And in the song, the antagonist, thank you, the antagonist is pretty messed up in the head. So the protagonist is attempting to communicate, and as we know, communicating to another human being is probably the hardest thing in the world to do, especially when it comes to the truth. So I don't think the protagonist wins in the end. I think he gets, or she gets wet, but it's all good. So this is Raindrops and Sunshine.
Rain falls on everyone. We'll be right back.
next song we would like to play for you is called With Every Light. And there's a... You want to hear the story behind the song or the meaning of the song?
Let's vote.
Meaning of the song? Story of the song. See, the meaning is not important. I've said that all along. So here's the story of the song. It's a very interesting story, I think. For a while, me and James and Darcy at the time were working out with a friend of ours, a trainer in Chicago. We were building up our muscles to once again tour the world with rock and roll. And I think Jimmy was working out too. He was working out something. one day I was having a conversation with our friend, and she was talking about how her mother passed away at roughly the same time as my mother. And she said, I have a friend who's a psychic, although the friend doesn't like the use of that word, so we'll call her an intuitive. She's an intuitive, and she can possibly communicate with your mother. So I became intrigued with the idea that maybe I would talk to my mother somewhere on the other side, as they say. For those who don't know, my mother passed away about 4 years ago. So, there's a whole nother story, but my mother did actually try to contact somebody and left messages through this other sort of intuitive woman. So it wasn't sort of out of my frame of reference that my mother would be able to communicate from the dead, so to speak. It gets stranger. So I went to see this person who's become a very close friend of mine. And really, in that particular afternoon, so many things about life and the things that I believe in were sort of confirmed for me in a general way. And I became sort of, in a rare moment of happiness, really content with the world. And first thing I did when I got home was I picked up a guitar and I wrote this song. And the meaning of the idea with every light is that, we basically are everybody that we meet, and the energy that sort of comes into our body becomes part of who we are. And in some ways, it's not just an acknowledgement of my mother somewhere and everything that goes on in my life, but an acknowledgement of the fact that everything that I've become in my life is, both from enemies and from friends, has become a part of me, and also you as well. So I'll give you that. So when I sing With Every Light, I'm talking about everybody, because it is about the light, and hopefully, you know what I mean. This song is sort of a legend in pumpkin world, because it has the rare distinction, I think, although I could be wrong, of the only song that we recorded for two different albums. Is that true? Yes. Kashgar Star? Oh, sorry. Well, that's it. Thank you. This song is called Let Me Give the World to You.
See, it's famous, even though it's never come out.
The song was originally written for the Adore album, and many people that have heard the Adore version told me that I'm absolutely insane because they believe it was probably the song that would have made Adore a hit album. But for some reason, it just didn't seem to be the right song, that album. So then we decided that we were going to record it for Machina. And of course, we didn't put it on Machina either. But I love this song. It's every once in a while you write a song, and it's sort of elusive. It doesn't want to really be held to anything. And we probably should have put this song on a soundtrack or something, because it doesn't really seem to want to be tied to any one album or any one moment in time. It'll probably be best served as sort of a song for a greatest hits, but maybe we'll leave it off that too and let it live as a legend. I'd like to tell you what the song was about, but you've already voted that you're not interested in the song meaning, so... this is a recurring theme in the songs that I write, but the actual meaning of Let Me Give the World to You is basically me as a boy speaking to a girl saying that let me give the world to you because obviously nothing else is going to fucking make you happy. And girls, you know what I'm talking about. So this is Let Me Give the World to You.
Chance to make believing always and
concludes our regularly scheduled program.